Item 7, risk tolerance report. Scott, are you on? I saw you on the line earlier.
I am here.
Great.
So I'm a little bit concerned about my internet connectivity or speed, just because I'm away from my office and I'm using a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot. It seems to be working okay, but I just wanted to throw that out there in case we get a little screwy.
Noted.
So I am going to try the technology of sharing my screen as soon as I have permission, whoever is administrating the meeting. If you would give me permission. There we go. Thank you. And here we are. Okay. So just a little bit of introduction and background. Those of you that were here 5 years ago for the introductory work on the functionally focused portfolio will remember the interviews that we did around risk tolerance. And that being part of the risk tolerance assessment that is the lead in to the asset liability study. And so we're going through an asset liability study again, and Tim thought it would be a good idea, and I concurred that reviewing the risk tolerance of the plan would be a good idea. So we went through essentially the same exercise. We look at the risk tolerance through the lens of willingness to accept risk and ability to incur risk. Willingness is all about those interviews and getting the collective sense of the board's thoughts on the topic. And then ability is all about assessing the strength, really, of the plan sponsors, primarily the county. And so that's what we did, and that's what I'll be presenting. The big reveal here, cutting to the bottom line, is that you guys are essentially where you were 5 years ago. So not much has changed. But there has been a few changes around the margin that, leads me in my assessment to believe that you have a little bit higher willingness that I think is mostly related to your comfort with the functionally focused portfolio and how well it's been implemented. And then a little bit less with respect to ability, and that is related to, the county remains strong for sure. But that's related to the uncertainty around the global health pandemic right now. So with that as lead in, I'm gonna get started moving through the slides. I will just add that I will look for opportunities or look for you guys to jump in with questions, and then also encourage Tim to chime in with chip shots as he deems appropriate. And bear with me. Okay. So table of contents, I'm going to cover this in the order of a quick intro, the plan sponsor review or ability, and then move into the interview findings around willingness and questions along the way, please. So enterprise risk tolerance, I talked about this. In terms of willingness and ability, if you think about why understanding the enterprise risk tolerance is so important, it's because your plan is really defined by the expected return and the risk that you take to get that expected return. Historically, the order of operations has been what return do we need, and then you build a portfolio to meet that, and the risk has been sort of a residual outcome of that risk return dynamic. That's led to problems because people don't think about the risk and what happens in a really bad scenario and what long-term implications that has, what a big drawdown has. So we sort of correctly flip that on order of operations on its head. Think about risk first. What level of risk are you comfortable with? Can you occur from a willingness and ability perspective? And then the return is the residual output. Now, there clearly has to be a balance there because you need to get the return to meet the benefit payments in line with the resources that you have that comes from your plan sponsors in the form of contributions. And you don't want to kill the golden goose or the goose that's laying the golden eggs. But if you just think about return and not about risk as inputs, you end up with big problems after market dislocations and drawdowns and long-term underfunded status. And then if you look at the chart on this page, it kind of is a quick and simple but effective framework for assessing the risk tolerance of the plan. You can see that willingness and ability are the two axes. As you move up in willingness, you can take more risk, assuming that you have the ability to do so, right? So the high willingness, low ability is kind of put you in that naive quadrant. If you have low willingness but high ability, you know, you're conservative and defensive. Low willingness and low ability, you need to be protective. And then high willingness and high ability, you can kind of get after it. So the observations from this year's assessment, bottom line, is reflected in the chart on the right, and relative to where we thought you guys were back when we did this in 2015, right? So you can see still conservative on the willingness side. I think it's a trademark of this board, but a little bit less conservative than you were 5 years ago, as I mentioned, around the comfort with the functionally focused portfolio. It didn't hurt that you guys had just gone through a litmus test with the big downturn in the first quarter and had come through that smelling like a rose. And then also comments around confidence in your investment staff and their ability to implement the functionally focused portfolio. And then with respect to ability, as I mentioned, the shift to the left really primarily due to an increase in unknown unknowns around the COVID crisis. So starting with the plan sponsor review. So we take a look at the credit rating, and you guys are strong, right? You can see there the couple of things to point out on the chart on the lower right-hand portion of the page. You have a AAA rating, so it's the highest rating, and it's also the highest amongst your peers. And you have a strong funded ratio. So from a credit ratings perspective and just an overall plan health perspective, in pretty good shape. On the next slide, this gets to capacity to assume more debt in the case that you need to, and you do have that capacity. So you could issue additional pension obligation bonds, you know, in the really low probability scenario where you need to take on debt to keep the plan well funded and pay benefits. Similar story with your debt ratios. You're in good shape in at or near benchmark in all cases. And your revenues, you know, up to this point have been strong. If you look at your revenue growth on the lower left-hand portion of the page, compound annual growth rate for revenue has been about 5%. The revenue mix is good. I have no idea what the forecast looks like. This was for fiscal year 2019, but up to this point, things have looked good. And then we also look at the strength of the county in terms of employment diversification. And you have a very diversified employment base. You're not concentrated in any one or a few economic sectors, which is not the same for all of the Sackers counties across the state. You guys have a strong and well-diversified employment base, and you're not beholden, on the next slide, to any single employer. You have lots of large employers across the county and a lot of small employers as well. So well-diversified, strong employment base. Economic and demographic data show that you are experiencing strong trends. You can look at the population growth, and you have population growth, which is good, and steady, moderate population growth, income growth, and low unemployment rate. So naturally that has gone up, but because of the strong unemployment picture, you know, relative to other counties and other parts around the country, you guys remain in good shape. So summarizing ability, Credit rating, strong. Capacity for debt to take on additional debt obligations in the unlikely circumstance that you have to. Revenues are strong with good revenue growth historically, good population growth and diverse employment. And then, as I alluded to, the wild card remains of the uncertain outlook as a result of the pandemic. So all that says, good ability to take on risk, slightly impacted, negatively impacted from the last time we did this due to the uncertainty. Any questions before we get into willingness? Moving on from there, I'm sensing that the last presentation might have lulled you into a sense of complacency. But I'm moving on to slide 16 now. And so what we did with these interviews is, and all of the trustees went through it, so you know, we hit different topics around the board's understanding of risk and then the board's willingness to accept risk in different areas. And we didn't ask the questions directly. We asked them by asking you to talk about the different elements of risk and how you felt about them. So the first one was mission and objectives to sort of test understanding, and there was complete consistency across the trustees with good understanding of what the mission and objectives are of the board to a person. So everyone essentially gave the same and correct answer. We talked about the time horizon along several different fronts. And this was about how long do you think you need to evaluate these different elements of the plan. So the first one was the overall plan. How long do you think you should be thinking of this too? And each of them were very long term, from 10 plus years to forever. And so, you know, everybody agrees and understands that this is a long-term liability, a long-term obligation, and you need to think about it as such and plan as such. And then the next question was, how long do you need to evaluate the strategy? So there was low consistency here, and it was anywhere from pretty short term to pretty long term. By the way, this same inconsistency existed 5 years ago. Most of these responses were very similar to 5 years ago, and it's not a real concern. But if you asked me, I would say that you need a fairly long time to evaluate the strategy, somewhere 5 to 7 years plus, right? Making sure that you go through full market cycles, making sure that you have markets where you see that the plan is doing what it's supposed to be doing, both in up markets and down markets, and maybe not just one of those. So I would say a pretty long time to evaluate the strategy and its effectiveness. Manager evaluations, so a fair amount of consistency here. And here again, I would say maybe longer than you folks stated on average. And again, it's about market cycle and ensuring that you have information to evaluate whether the strategy is doing what it's supposed to be doing in up markets and down markets and through different markets. Investment philosophy. So there are a number of elements that we looked at here. The first one was, do you want a simple plan or a complex plan? And here there was a little bit of a difference, good consistency, but a little bit of a difference relative to the first time we did this, where it was more biased towards simple. Here there was generally a preference for simplicity, but a clear acceptance of complexity when there's benefit to be had. And you know, that's a good thing. That keeps all your options open and allows you to move into complexity if it's determined that it will help the overall investment strategy. Active versus passive, you know, as in the investor landscape in general, there was low consistency here, some strongly in favor of active and believing that those excess returns will come, some bias towards passive, with the belief that active managers tend not to exceed their fees in terms of excess returns. And then others were sort of indifferent and open to either, assuming that they're convinced that it will lead to a beneficial experience for the plan. Thought leader versus safety in numbers. This was interestingly a big difference from 2015, where most folks were more interested in being sort of middle of the pack. And now the tendency was definitely moving towards, yeah, happy to, interested in exploring ideas, new ideas, and not necessarily needing to be in the middle of the herd. And I suspect that that is related to your increasing comfort with a strategy that's a little bit different, right? The functionally focused portfolio is not a mainstream strategy. You've had good experience with it, and I suspect that that is what's changed your willingness to move out of the center of the herd. And again, I think it's a healthy change. Action versus patience. So this was in around a couple of areas. One was, you know, if you see market dislocation, action versus patience. And the other was with respect to manager underperformance and the need to take action versus staying patient. And there was a bias towards patience, which is a good thing, right? You don't want a knee-jerk reaction with respect to broad market movements. And willing to take action with managers if appropriate. And that comes back to what is appropriate related to the time frame for evaluating managers. And I'll just reiterate that in my view, the appropriate time frame is through a full market cycle where you have an opportunity to evaluate whether the manager is meeting expectations, whether or not they are outperforming their benchmark through that market cycle. So then we moved on to organizational risk, and there were a few elements here. The first one being key person risk. And by this key person risk, I think everybody understands that we're obviously talking about your CIO and if he were to get hit by a bus or be lured away somehow. And there was very high consistency on this with your recognition that there was high risk associated with a CIO departure, but that is mitigated by a very stable board and consultant knowledge and the consultant being around at the inception of this strategy. And then I'll make a point here also that, you know, you guys aren't alone in this. First of all, there's risk associated with any CIO departure, but, and in your case, because of the uniqueness of your investment strategy or relative uniqueness of your investment strategy, maybe that ratchets up a bit. But there are also other plans in the 37 Act counties that have a very similar level of key person risk, and San Bernardino County comes to mind. So moving on to board turnover, very high consistency here, and that's around the stability of the board. You know, I know and recognize most of you from when we put this strategy in, and then the idea of staggered terms and the ability to pass that institutional knowledge on when and if new trustees come on board. Environmental risk, we talked about peer risk, and this was a change as well. High consistency, most believe it is low. You know, everybody tends to think that it's low until you underperform your peers for some period of time. And that was the sense that I got last time, right? You said low, although not as low as you said this time, but I got the sense from the responses and the discussion that you would sort of tend to abandon your strategy if you underperform peers, right? And there was some of that this time, but much less. And again, I think that is due to the high confidence in your functionally focused portfolio strategy. Governance structure. High consistency here. Everybody's very comfortable with the governance structure, the level of delegation of authority that you all have decided to hand down over the past few years. General view that information received is sufficient to help you all meet your fiduciary duty, and then very high confidence in investment and administrative staff. So all good things with respect to governance. Liquidity reserve sufficiency. So this is a big one, and it has to do with that liquidity bucket and the 4 years-ish of liquid reserves, 4 years of benefit payments, gross benefit payments that you hold in liquid reserves. And very high consistency here that 3 to 4 years is about right, but some interest in providing supporting analysis to help you guys get an intuitive understanding of the trade-offs of opportunity cost with holding 20% of the portfolio in cash versus the risk of not having that big a liquidity reserve. And so this is something that we are working on. We put together some analysis, and we will share that and help you get that intuitive sense at the front end of the asset liability study that we've got coming next month. And so I'll just come back to the summary that you guys are approximately where you were 5 years ago with some slight tweaks, a little bit higher willingness to accept risk, and a little bit lower ability just given the uncertainty of the current economic environment we're in. And with that, I will pause for questions or comments.
Not seeing any lights come on. Oh, there's one.
Yeah, I got lights. One. I figured I'd say something. The latter point on the effect of the pandemic, that I'm assuming, Scott, is shared by plans universally in one way or the other. That is that effect, if you will, either on decision making or ability or whatever category, seems to be something that applies equally to everyone, for sure.
100%. I just sat in on a board meeting of another client just this morning, and they were talking specifically about the budgetary concerns within the discussion of what should they be doing with their discount rate. And so everybody is facing this and thinking about it and concerned about it.
Yeah, I was just calling out just to make sure that in terms of our analysis or takeaway here, that overlay is no different than everybody else. In that sense, we're in the same place as our peers and everybody.
Yeah, and you guys remain stronger than most of your peers from an ability to accept risk, given the strength of your local economic environment and the strength of your plan sponsor.
Scott, just a quick question. So with relatively few changes in the aggregate positioning, I just want to make sure trustees have in mind the kinds of changes that they might be able to affect at the asset class or at the asset allocation level next quarter. I mean, is it just going to talk about potential differences in liquidity sizing, or is relative aggregate risk on the table as well?
Yeah, so I would say both, Tim, and it has to do with the relative size of the liquidity bucket. So if you look back, and I'll just go back. So if you look back at the heuristic of where you guys sit in this framework, you still have higher ability than you have willingness. And so, we want to respond to both for sure, but we want to make sure that the board has a keen understanding, intuitive understanding of the impact of their relatively low willingness relative to their ability. So we'll come back to the board and talk about, as I mentioned, that balance between opportunity cost and risk, and then we'll provide some alternate scenarios that show what would happen if they were to lower that liquidity bucket and place those assets in higher earning assets.
Thanks.
Scott, a quick nit, if you could go to page 12, I promise to make this quick.
I can always count on you for nits, Jerry.
I'll make it quick.
Page 12.
Or slide 12.
Okay.
One more. Whoop. There you go. See the third item down there? That's a lack of local knowledge on the part of a Seattle person, but it's Bart is all capital letters.
Yeah.
No, otherwise, this could just easily be Bart Simpson.
I know that, but did not catch it in my review. So thanks for that.
Thank you.
Well, if there are no more questions, Mr. Chair, that concludes my report.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Last chance for any trustee.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you all.
Okay. Thank you so much.